Neil Gooderson was supposed to be here to present today. He got called away to some urgent matters, and so I am taking his place. If you look at the hard copy program, my name is actually there, so maybe some of you were expecting Jim Gaffney, and I am Jim Gaffney. I am not Neil Gooderson, and we wanted to give an industry perspective of global customers, the environment, and pertaining to our subject matter, how we believe that we can make a difference in making better use of our inputs to improve prosperity, productivity, as well as being environmental stewards. And we've been working on this since DuPont and DuPont Pioneer came into being. And we have our own sustainable growth goals that we really work hard on, and a lot of them that we work on within Pioneer are the food security and the energy goals. Going out to since 2012, for an example, we've put into over $1 billion worth of research into food security and energy. We brought over 1,000 new products to the marketplace just since 2012. And engaging young people, especially in developing countries, is another one of our sustainability goals. We're closing in on 400,000 young people. We've got some very specific criteria that are fairly rigorous to meet these goals, and we're making progress. It's going to be a stretch to hit some of them, but we think we're on the right track, and we think we're doing the right thing here. You know, since Henry Wallace formed Pioneer back in 1926, we've really been working on improving agriculture, and we will continue to do so. When Henry Wallace started, it was with hybrids, maize hybrids. And we continue to have some of the best genetics in the world, and we continue to work on developing improved hybrids. We also have excellent agronomic research and agronomic services. We have a very strong biotechnology pipeline that we think is very important to agriculture now and going into the future. And more recently, we are working on genome editing, which I'll talk about a little bit too. We believe that there's going to be some really excellent applications in a lot of ways to where we can use this technology and really make a difference in a lot of crops in a lot of countries around the world. And I'll talk a little bit about each of these as we go forward. So thinking about our current technologies, I mentioned traditional breeding and hybrids. Well, a few years ago, our breeder started working on a product that we call Aquamax hybrids, Optimum Aquamax. With Optimum Aquamax, we can improve yield under drought conditions and be at parity or even better under optimal growing conditions. So the best of both worlds for a farmer offers him some risk management tools in his operation and still allows him to really hit that maximum yield potential when conditions are good. We're also complementing that with a transgenic trait program. So I mentioned biotechnology, our agricultural biotechnology programs. We really, with Aquamax now, for example, under drought, we've got a very high standard to reach and meet with our transgenic trait program, but we fully intend to do that, and we look forward to bringing some of these transgenic trait products to the marketplace in coming years. So again, it's all about giving that farmer some risk management tools to help him operate and use his inputs more efficiently while also being an environmental steward. I think Mark talked about that, Dr. Ping-Hu talked about that as well, is how can we use inputs more efficiently? We don't want to limit productivity, but we sure as heck need to be environmental stewards while we are increasing that productivity. So thinking about hybrids, I've mentioned hybrid maize a couple of times already. We're not just a hybrid maize company. We are working on a number of different crops in a number of different geographies. And think about hybrids and developing hybrid programs in crops with perfect flowers. It's not as easy as just plucking the tassel off and removing that pollen source. In a perfect flower, it's not that process of physically removing that pollen is not scalable, right? So the goal of making hybrids is to have cross-pollination and eliminate self-pollination. So over the years, breeders have developed something called cytoplasmic male sterility, in which we can eliminate pollen in that female side and have exclusive cross-pollination from the male. So a very powerful technology The challenge with this technology is that breeders have to work extremely hard at first getting that female and male that works just right. A good maintainer that doesn't have pollen shed, and a good restorer that really has the pollen to do the cross-fertilization. We believe that we have technology coming along in the very near future, and we have already have proof of concept that we can apply to these crops to really make a better hybrid in a more efficient manner. And what this means is, think about our maize programs with thousands upon thousands of inbreds, and each year our inbreds get better, and by better inbreds we have better hybrids. We can do the same thing in other crops, and right now it's not happening in a lot of regions of the world. So we really believe that hybrids are really one of the answers to using inputs more efficiently in a more environmentally stewarding process. So one thing you might say is, well, Mr. Multinational Seed Company guy, of course you like hybrids. You can charge for hybrids each and every year. And that is true. We do not shy away from that. We are a for-profit company, and we do not apologize for making a profit. But if you look at the literature, if you look at history of where hybrids have been introduced, whether it's India, China, Africa, there are ripple effects of the benefits of a more productive crop and new seed every year. Even the people that are espousing open pollinated varieties in Africa, they will still tell you farmers should be buying new seed each and every year. Okay, so it's not just about making money, it's about creating greater prosperity for those people that can benefit from it. Genome editing is a tool I mentioned in the second slide there. This is really a new technology that's come to our crop production group, our breeding group, our genetics group. We really believe this is a powerful technology, and I am not a molecular biologist. I'm an agronomist by training, so I'm going to just say that this is a new means of creating mutants in crops in a very precise and a very efficient manner. And by doing so, we can really improve the crop in a much quicker, more efficient way. Think of how we've used mutagenesis in the past. It's with very harsh chemicals or radiation, gamma radiation, for an example. You apply that to the seeds and you hope for the best. And you hope you have created a mutant that is beneficial, that can help you in some way. All right? And you're basically hoping for the best. I've always been told, whether it's in marketing or research, that hope is not a strategy. With traditional mutagenesis, our strategy was seriously was hope. We were just hoping to get something. With genome editing, we can be much more precise, we can be much more efficient, and much more safe in the application of the technology to create the plants that we want to create. More productive plants. And I'm going to give an example here of a crop that we probably don't think about too much in North America temperate agriculture, and that is cassava, and manioc esculenta. Okay, so this is a crop that hundreds of millions of people around the globe, especially in tropical regions, rely on for subsistence and sustenance. In a lot of ways, it's a really incredible crop. It will produce a tuber, and it will produce food under the harshest of conditions. Yet it's a perennial plant with a long life cycle, has a very weak flowering habit. It's slow growing, at least by annual crop standards. Very complex genetics that aren't clearly understood yet. In short, it's very challenging for traditional plant breeding to make improvements to this crop. With guided Cas9 genome editing, we have some real opportunities to make some improvements in this crop. When we know what genes control what could be infected as far as diseases in the crop or what controls growth habit, or God forbid we understand what controls flowering habit and we could help it flower a little bit with some gene editing, I think we could make some real differences in a crop like this. And this is just one example of how sometimes we think about these new technologies and how we can apply them. And that leads us to what is the impact of GM crop adoption. So I've talked a little about genetic modification in different ways. This is a study that came out of Germany from Klumper and Keim. They did a meta-analysis of all the various research that was available. on GM crop adoption. And if you look at the yield, it was over a 21% increase in yield to farmers that adopted GM crops. There was a definite decrease in pesticide quantity and pesticide costs associated with GM crop adoption, almost 40% pesticide cost. A slight increase in total production cost, but that was not significant in their study. What was most significant was farmer profit, 68% increase in farmer productivity. One of the strongest statements they also made in this is that smallholder farmers in developing economies benefited more than others, benefited more than the company bringing the technology, and benefited more than farmers in industrialized farming situations like Brazil or North America. That wasn't necessarily intuitive to me until they explained a little bit in the article. So I grew up on a farm 2 hours west of here. This was before GM technology was available. And we had, but before GM technology, we had all technology available to us. Soil sampling, soil studies, fertility management, any kind of fertilizer we wanted, mechanization, pest control, you name it. So when GM technology came along, it was just one more tool that we had available to us. Okay. Granted, it was a welcome tool. We use it in a lot of different ways. It helps us be very productive, but it was just one more tool. Now think of a smallholder farmer. I think Dr. Hugh even mentioned, they don't necessarily have soil analysis available to them. They don't actually know sometimes in these situations how much fertilizer they need, what should be their plant spacing, what pesticides would work the best for them. So when they do get GM technology in an easy to use, scale neutral seed, it makes a huge difference for them. And that's why smallholder farmers benefited most in this study. So I'm going to switch gears here a little bit and talk about some things that we have already been mentioned by Mark and also by Dr. Hugh on agronomy and agronomic research, agronomic services. Without strong agronomy, none of this other stuff is really going to matter. And that's why at DuPont Pioneer, we've been collaborating with land-grant universities since the beginning of when Pioneer was formed, and really digging in on this subject area. And now we've got an excellent service in the form of NSERCA services that allows us to really apply that agronomic knowledge to the farmer and make sure that he can take advantage of this, he or she, for that matter. The nitrogen piece is one very important piece that's already been implemented. It really helps a farmer on the fly make some very good decisions about how much nitrogen that crop needs. Mark mentioned the idea that, you know, farmers make a plan and then they have to make another plan if it rains too much or doesn't rain enough. And NSERCA Services is a tool that can help farmers make those decisions a little bit easier and a little bit more efficiently. We do also have coming very soon as part of this service irrigation management, so you can get just the right amount of water on to maximize that crop yield, yet also be very careful with that very valuable input of water. Another reason why this technology and applying this technology as quickly as possible to all parts of the globe is climate. Now we know for a fact that climate has been changing since day one. It continues to change. More recently, it's probably been changing a little bit faster than we've seen in past years, but it is important. It's an important consideration for us to keep in mind. And one of the ways we do that is through our crop modeling and our advanced breeding and our simulated breeding. So we can, what we do is helps us define climate scenarios. It translates that climate to yield, and we can use simulated breeding to really help us predict and understand what's going to happen in the future. I think what's really important about any modeling or any simulation is that you validate it with real-world data. Each and every year that goes by, we do validate our models with real-world data. And this really helps us keep pace with climate change in a lot of ways. And I really believe, and it's not just DuPont Pioneer, although I'm biased, I think we're pretty good at it. Industry in general is keeping pace with climate change in a lot of these systems. One example of that, of course, is maize. The black dots are our maize yield over the years. And if you look from 1940 to present time, the yield of maize continues to climb in the face of all the challenges we're facing. And this isn't just about genetics and plant breeding. Of course, there's a lot of other things that go with it. Plant population, soil fertility, pest management, weed management, transgenic traits have helped. Even things like mechanization and increasing operation size are things that you wouldn't ordinarily think go into increasing yield, but they actually do have a role to play. So this is the kind of technology, the kind of information that we really believe needs to be spread more globally, because here's a chance for us to do a little bit of compare and contrast with a couple of different countries. So if you look at our global customers for DuPont Pioneer, India and Africa, populations greater than 1 billion, greater than 60% of these populations are directly involved in agriculture today. And on these countries, average farm size is less than 3 hectares per farmer. Compared to the United States, where we've got a population of about 320 million, and less than 2% of the population is directly involved in agriculture. And the farm size is 60 to 70 times larger than in Africa. So if there's any marketers in the room, we really need some help on segmenting these farmers, hundreds and hundreds of millions of farmers that we are trying to access. It's a truly a big challenge. And I want to take a step further and just look at Africa. So Africa is a big continent. You can put about 3.5 times the size of the United States in Africa, just by total area. It has about 1/4 of the world's arable land, 1/6 of the population. It has about 1 billion people today. By 2050, it'll be about 20 billion, and a very young population. So talking about that arable land, I guess the question we have, and this goes to some of the work that David Tillman has done over the years, do we want to use all that arable land for crop production? If we do not increase productivity in Africa, we will be using all of that land for crop production. I'm not sure that's in anyone's best interest. There's a lot of excellent, fragile, interesting ecosystems that we'd probably like to protect. Today, maize production in Africa averages about 2 tons per hectare, not quite even. I think Mark mentioned that his farm this year did probably close to 14, 15 tons per hectare. Okay, there's a pretty big gap there. And I think we can make some improvements. So how do we serve these customers? Well, it's a challenge, because like anywhere else in the world, one of the best ways to do it is demonstration plots and field days. So how do you reach 600 million farmers in Africa and another 600 million farmers in India with field plots and demos? That's how we are operating today, though. What's really helpful, though, is technology is coming along to help us as well. So a lot of these farmers around the world now have cell phones. Huge advantage to create transparency in what inputs are available to them, how best to use those inputs, and perhaps even more importantly, it's transparency on the markets. I think in the U.S., we really take for granted the commodity markets. We don't always like the price we're receiving for our corn and soybeans and wheat, but at least we know what the price is, and it's fairly transparent. In Africa, that's not always the case. Cell phone technology allows farmers to understand who the buyers are, where they are, and it creates competition for their crop, which is a huge advantage which has not been available. So these are other things that we work on to try to help these farmers connect to the marketplace in different ways. So in summary, I just want to mention the various things we're working on. Hybrid crops, we think, are extremely important for prosperity, greater productivity, and environmental stewardship. Applying agronomic research and services to make sure we're doing the best we can with those hybrids is really critical. And of course, agriculture, biotechnology, and genome editing, I think, are going to offer some very powerful tools in coming years to really help us continue to do a better job. The challenge we face is how we move this technology to those areas where we need it most. And that would include Africa, India, China, for that matter. So a lot of work in front of us. I think it's a really important time to be in agriculture. or as Mark mentioned, commodity prices for the main crops are probably not where we want them to be right now. It's a little tough to be a farmer these days, but at the same time, I think we still need to work on all the inputs and all the technology available to make sure we are accounting for this rise in population and the environmental challenges we're facing. So with that, that's all I have. Thank you very much for your attention.